much. As usual, very happy to be here. So my plan today is to cover it's like an introductory lecture to QCD in 2+1 dimensions. I'm not gonna try to be pedagogical. There are way too many details to explain in 1 hour, but I'll try to give you an overview of some recent progress on QCD in 2+1 dimensions. Let me start with some motivations. Also, this is based on of the order of 4 to 5 papers from the recent couple of months with David and Jaume and Anton and Nadi Seiberg and a few other related papers with other collaborators. And so the most relevant paper for what I'm going to talk today is the paper with Nadi Seiberg from 3 months ago, but it's very closely related to also some upcoming work with Jaume and some other work with David and Anton and various other things. So let me start with some motivation. So QCD in 3+1 dimensions, which is relevant for particle physics, has of course been studied intensively using both analytical and numerical methods. By the way, if there are any questions, please stop me. And people have developed a rather compelling picture for the dynamics of QCD in 3+1 dimensions, namely the theory of SUN gauge fields with quarks in the fundamental representation. So we have NF quarks in the fundamental representation and NF quarks in the anti-fundamental representation. So this theory has been studied extremely intensively by both lattice and field theory people. And there is a very compelling picture. So we can also add a mass term, but I'm actually gonna assume that the quarks are massless. So it's known that the symmetry of the system, the symmetry group G, is a SUNF times SUNF times U1. This is the U1 baryon, so to speak. And the compelling picture that has been developed in the last couple of decades is, of course, that there is some critical N, which is often called NCFT, or at least I'll call it NCFT. So there is some critical N, NCFT, below which the symmetry breaks. So here we have spontaneous symmetry breaking from G to SUNF times U1. So we have SUNF worth of generators, which are spontaneously broken. So here we have massless pions. Now, as you crank up NF, at some point, the symmetry is no longer broken. So the vacuum is G invariant. And you get a non-trivial CFT conformal field theory in the infrared. That's the picture here. And this is supposed to hold up to 11 over 2 times N. Okay, this number is known exactly. However, this number is not known exactly. And the best guess from lattice estimates and various other estimates is probably something like 3.5N, give or take. At least for large N, that would be a reasonable estimate. And here we get a free infrared theory. Okay, so this picture is quite satisfying. It passes many consistency checks. It's consistent with the lattice, consistent with particle physics. There is a small issue that has to be discussed when NF is equal to 1, because when NF is equal to 1, the massless quarks theory does not have extra symmetries compared to the massive quark theory. And actually, there is no symmetry breaking for NF equals 1, as you can see from that formula, because SUNF trivializes. So this case is a special case. If you want to learn about it, you can look at my recent paper with David and Nari, where we analyzed this case in great detail. But other than this special case, this picture is compelling and agreed upon everybody, and it's nice. And you can also try to discuss massive, what happens when you add the mass to the quarks. That's a separate story, but the message here is that the QCD in 3+1 dimensions is well understood. At least there is a compelling phase diagram. Now, what are the reasons for studying QCD in 2+1 dimensions rather than 3+1 dimensions? Well, there are many reasons coming from different directions. Let me just point out a few. So the reasons to be interested in QCD in 2+1 dimensions are, first of all, because they are connected to physics in actually 4 dimensions, in 3+1 dimensions, through, for example, domain wall constructions, defects. So QCD in lower dimensions arises dynamically on defects, domain walls in 3+1 dimensions. It also arises sort of naturally if you study finite temperature field theory in 3+1 dimensions. So finite temperature or circle compactifications and these kind of things. So it arises rather naturally in these constructions which start their life in 3+1 dimensions. But also recently, of course, there has been a lot of interest in this bunch of theories because they are connected to quantum Hall states. So some particular examples have been argued to be connected to quantum Hall physics. And actually, more generally, these theories appear to be at the boundaries of non-trivial SPT phases, topological phases. So this is more like condensed matter physics, SPT phases. And also, these theories, because we're in 2+1 dimensions, there is a potential for having anions, which are interesting for topological order. And so that's another reason that people are interested in those theories, because they can produce interesting examples of non-abelian anions and these kind of things. So there is a bunch of reasons why people are interested in these examples, in these theories. And well, so I'll try to just study them on their own. When these are basically the motivations. So the main are there any questions about the motivations? So the main novelty in 2+1 dimensions is that it's not enough to specify the gauge group and the matter content. We have to specify the Chern-Simons coupling. That exists only in 2+1 dimensions. So that's governed by some integer k, given multiplying the following Lagrangian. So we have a Chern-Simons Lagrangian, where the coupling is integer. In fact, in my conventions, I'm not going to explain that. It could be integer or half integer, because what I will call k is not quite the k that appears in the Lagrangian, but it's shifted. So it's a half integer, and I'm going to use such a convention, which I'm not going to explain in too much detail. So when we study 2+1 dimensional field theories with gauge group G and some matter content, we also have to specify the Chern-Simons coupling k. So let me just now let me define the class of theories that I'll be interested in. So the gauge part of the Lagrangian is going to consist of the usual kinetic term, so 1 over 4 e squared, a trace of f squared. So that's the usual kinetic term for gauge fields, which we can also write down in 2+1 dimensions. And then there is this Chern-Simons term, which again, I'm being slightly sloppy here, because the k that I'm going to use is not the same k that appears in the Lagrangian. But I'm not going to mention this subtlety again. I'm just being a little bit sloppy. So this is the gauge part of the Lagrangian. And now the fermion part. So the fermions that we're going to study NF fermions in the fundamental and anti-fundamental representation. So we'll have something like psi dagger d slash psi. So we're going to have NF fermions in the fundamental representation, and they might have mass terms. And we can have a sum over I. And there will be a sum over I. So there is one additional important novelty of 2 plus 1 dimensions compared to 3 plus 1 dimensions, which is that fermions do not have to come in conjugate representations. It's OK to have fermions. Here we have NF fermions in the fundamental representation. And we do not need to add fermions in the anti-fundamental representation, because there are no gauge anomalies to cancel in 2 plus 1 dimensions. And in addition, if you conjugate a fermion in 2 plus 1 dimensions, then well, the chirality doesn't change because there is no chirality. And the representation becomes the anti-fundamental representation. So you can write a mass term, which is invariant under all the symmetries. This is in contrast to QCD in 3 plus 1 dimensions, where it's impossible to write a mass term that preserves all the symmetries for an f bigger than 1. But for an f, in 2 plus 1 dimensions, it's possible to write a mass term that preserves all the symmetries. So what are the symmetries of this theory? This theory is going to, instead of writing this Lagrangian all over again, I'm just going to refer to this theory as SUN level K. OK, so there is a subscript here standing for this coupling and NF fermions. OK, so this is how I'm going to refer to that theory instead of writing this Lagrangian. So this is just a notation that stands for this Lagrangian. And as I said, when I write NF fermions, what I mean NF fermions in the fundamental representation, and there are no fermions in the, no additional fermions in the anti-fundamental representation. Let me also write the symmetry group. So the symmetry group of this model, this is again something that's slightly different from 4 dimensions. It's UNF. In fact, if you want to be precise, you have to divide by some discrete factors, but I'm not going to try to be, I'm not going to be precise. I'm just going to write it like that. So this is the symmetry of the model. It's UNF. You can rotate all the fermions, and you can also dress them up with phases. So this is the family of models that we want to study. This is the best. This is basically an analog, a very close analog of QCD. In 3 plus 1 dimensions, and we're going to refer to that as QCD in 2 plus 1 dimensions. So this is an analog of QCD in 4 dimensions, I meant to say. So this is the question that we're going to pose. So we see, we see several parameters in these models. We see a mass, which is, in fact, preserving all the symmetries, as I said, unlike the mass in 3 plus 1 dimensions. All the continuous symmetries are preserved. And we see k. So we have to understand, what does this theory do? So what does SUN level k with an F fermions do in the infrared? What does this theory do in the infrared as a function, of a k and a mass? Okay, that's the question that we would like to pose. Now, this question could have been posed, of course, many years ago, but you'll see that I'm actually going to use recent developments, very recent developments, to answer this question. And it would seem that perhaps such an answer could not have been obtained many years ago. So this is a rather pertinent question to ask. And we couldn't quite have answered this question many years ago, I think. So I am going to use very recent developments in condensed matter and in high energy physics to answer this question, or at least to propose an answer for this question. So let's start from the easy things. So some aspects of these questions are very easy. And we'll try to start from the easy aspects of these questions. Easy aspects of this question, and then build up towards answering the question more completely. So the easy aspects of these questions are the following. There are essentially two easy aspects, but I'm going to start from the most easy one. So this is what happens when the mass is large. So we'll try to analyze the system now when m is huge. Huge compared to what? So let's say much, much bigger than all the other dimensionful parameters that appear in that Lagrangian. So it's really semi-classical. So let's say much larger than E squared, or E is the gauge coupling. So we'll start from analyzing the theory when the quarks are very, very heavy and basically non-relativistic, very weakly coupled, and we'll build up from there. So that's where I'm going to start, and then we'll try to patch up the full phase diagram where M is potentially also small and not necessarily semi-classically large, and also where the other couplings K are in the strong coupling regime and so on. So we'll do it by this patchwork method where we'll start from some easy things and try to fill up phase diagram as we go. Yeah, I should emphasize again that this is largely a web of conjectures that is somehow very well interacting with other conjectures. And also it seems to connect to some special cases that are even experimentally relevant. So there is no proof for what I'm going to say, but it seems that it's a consistent web of conjectures. So this is already by itself non-trivial. It passes many consistency checks. And like many other dualities, we cannot prove that. But maybe one day in the future, these systems could be simulated on the lattice using spins. And perhaps those new things that I'm going to explain are going to be seen. So are there any questions about the introduction? OK, so let me start. So let this be the mass axis. As you can see from the Lagrangian that I wrote above, in fact, m in 2 plus 1 dimensions is a real parameter. This is unlike 3 plus 1 dimensions. M is naturally a real parameter. And so there might be a distinction between m being plus infinity and m being minus infinity. So we'll have to be careful about that. So let's start with m being plus infinity. Very, very large positive mass. So we can integrate out the quarks, right? We can integrate them out because they're non-relativistic. And then after integrating them out, we remain with a essentially pure gauge theory. So the idea behind this limit is that we can integrate out semi-classically or at one loop, in fact. So we can integrate out at one loop. And we can trust the result, because higher loop corrections would be suppressed by the mass of these heavy quarks. So we can throw them away. We can integrate out at one loop. And there is a well-known phenomenon due to Redlich from the 80s, where Redlich observed that if you integrate out non-relativistic quarks or heavy quarks at one loop, then it amounts to shifting this Chern-Simons level by some constant. And that's it. So the only effect of integrating out at one loop heavy quarks is that they shift the coefficient of this Chern-Simons term by some half integer in general. So, and at the end of the day, therefore, you get a pure Chern-Simons theory with no propagating matter fields. So when m is huge and positive, due to this effect of Redlich, what we get in the infrared is a theory with no fermions. It's just a pure theory of anions. There is no propagating stuff in the infrared. So we get SUN level K plus an F over 2. And here I'm using the result of Redlich, who showed that integrating out fermions at one loop shifts per each fundamental flavor the Chern-Simons coefficient by a half. So we have an F over 2 if we integrate them all out when the mass is huge and positive. Now, this is no longer a non-trivial gauge theory here, since there is a possible confusion between this notation and this notation. this is no longer a non-trivial gauge theory. This is just a Chern-Simons theory, a Chern-Simons TQFT. So I'm going to write Chern-Simons TQFT. So this is just a symbol for a topological quantum field theory. We know everything about it in principle. You can, for example, look at the work of Moore and Seiberg from the 80s. And Witten, of course. Witten and many others. This is a model of non-abelian anions about which we know everything. So the deep infrared theory for very large positive M is some particular topological theory of the Chern-Simons type, which is completely well understood. There is nothing mysterious about it. Now, when the mass is huge and negative, something very similar happens, except that instead of adding a half per fermion, we have to subtract a half per fermion. So we get SUN level K minus an F over 2. And these are the correct results at long distances, at large mass. And there is no argument about it. So this is also true for any K. This part of the phase diagram is true for any K. When the mass is huge, this is correct. Question is, what happens in between when the mass is not parametrically large and quantum fluctuations are large and the quarks cannot be treated non-relativistically, they cannot be integrated out at one loop? So the question is, what happens in between? Okay, that's the central question of strong coupling in QCD, which we're going to try to address.
Sir?
Yep.
So if K is very large, so that the mass of the photons or the mass of the gauge particles is of order m,
yes.
Does that work?
Yes. This, when K is very large, this would, you might think, okay, your question is essentially whether this limit may or may not have subtleties with the limit of taking K to be very large. As you'll see in a second, there is no issue like that, at least not to our, at least not within what we currently understand. So it seems that it's enough to take m to be large, and that's it. Yeah, well, if k is large, then it's a bonus. It does not subtract from what I said. It's even better. Any other questions about this part? This is the first non-trivial thing that, I mean, this is the first formula. So are there any additional questions about it? OK, good. So our central goal will be to fill out the bulk of this phase diagram. And now let's do it in steps. So here I'm going to, try to leave that here on the blackboard so that I could try to fill it up. So how can we proceed? This is essentially something that we knew for decades, or at least somebody knew for decades. And it wasn't clear how to proceed until recently. First of all, I should say that the lattice simulations of these systems are tricky, because the Chern-Simons term has an I. If you write it properly in the action, it's actually in the Euclidean action, it has an I, and it leads to phases, which are perhaps rapidly oscillating. And it's very hard to therefore simulate these models on the lattice. So we don't have direct information about what's going on when the mass is not large. But recently, there appeared new proposals for at least what happens with these theories at large enough k. And I'm going to start and review those proposals for what happens here at large enough k. And we'll try to guess what happens at smaller k from there. So we'll start from large k. How large, I'm not going to tell you yet, but I'll say how large in a few minutes. So for large k, there appeared the so-called boson fermion dualities recently, about which you've surely heard. So we have boson fermion dualities. In fact, when they initially appeared, it wasn't even appreciated that they are only valid at large k. This was understood slightly later. So I'm going to tell you what these dualities imply. And I'm going to specify the k for which they hold. So what these dualities imply is the following picture. So I'm going to draw the consequences of these dualities on the same plane here, on the same axis. So what these dualities imply is that what we wrote there is definitely correct. So there is SUN level K minus NF over 2. Is it visible enough? Or is it OK? Is it visible enough? So this is definitely correct. The dualities do not contradict the semi-classical results, of course. So they confirm. They're in agreement with what we said there. But what they say is that there is a single special point somewhere in the M axis. So the dualities proclaim or conjecture that there is a single special point on this M axis, and just one, at which there are new massless fields, a new CFT. So there is a CFT, which is strongly coupled, presumably. Well, it doesn't have to be literally strongly coupled, but there is a non-trivial CFT. So let me just call it non-trivial. And this CFT, we don't know much about it, but it's a bunch of massless fields that somehow help to go from this phase, they render the transition from this phase to this phase possible. I should mention that ASTIC QFT, so this is a non-abelian theory of onions, and this is another non-abelian theory of non-abelian onions. They are not identical. In general, they are not identical. You see that their indices are not the same. Here it's K minus NF over 2, and here it's K plus NF over 2. So generically, these theories are not identical. And since they are topological theories, you know, in topology, it's very hard to make something which is topological change. You have to do something discontinuous or something violent of that sort. So therefore, you cannot just go from this phase to this phase without introducing some sort of phase transition. And what these dualities imply is that there is a single second order phase transition. So it's a conformal field theory. It's a non-trivial conformal field theory. And if you tune the mass in this Lagrangian in an appropriate way, imagine on the lattice, you would hit that conformal field theory eventually. And more interestingly, it's not just that there is a conformal field theory. So let's just summarize it in this way. So starting from SUN level K plus NF fermions, if you tune the mass of these fermions in some way, you'll hit this CFT. Slightly to the left, there would be one theory of onions. Slightly to the right, there would be another theory of onions. But more interestingly, these boson fermion dualities claim that, in fact, the same conformal field theory at long distances can be achieved or arrived at from a completely different theory. So it provides an alternative UV complete model, which flows to exactly the same phase transition. And that theory is U. Let me just copy it correctly. So that there is U NF over 2 plus K level minus N. But now, instead of adding fermions in the fundamental representation, we add bosons in the fundamental representation. So the idea is that there is another UV complete model, which happens to have exactly the same two semi-classical phases. And you can verify that by a computation. And it flows to exactly the same second order transition.
Sorry, Zohar.
Yep.
Is it obvious that it's a second order transition? Or where does it come from?
It has not been proven. But first of all, well, you can prove it for K, which is sufficiently large. It's obvious. We can even compute the anomalous dimensions perturbatively. And well, let's just postulate for sufficiently large K, this is true. And I'm going to try to say how large K should be for this to be true. So first, I'm going to try to explain why this conjecture for this fermion boson duality is not insane. Because in the fermion description, it's obvious from integrating out these fermions at one loop that one has these two non-abelian theories of onions on the two sides of the transition. In this description, it's less obvious. So let me try to explain why in this language it's OK. And once we've established that, we'll try to proceed and understand what are the limits on K for which this picture should be true. So this is the idea for what happens for sufficiently large K. Now let's do this consistency check that I just mentioned. So I already told you that there is a paper of Redlich from the 80s where he showed that integrating out fermions, heavy fermions at one loop leads to these two theories of anions on the two sides of the transition. So for the boson, for the bosonic theory, it's actually simple. The mass for the fermion, the mass deformation for the fermion under this supposed duality maps to a minus m squared phi dagger phi. So that's the map. So once you deform by a mass term the fermionic theory, the mass of the boson gets also deformed in a similar way. Here I meant to say that while deforming it, let me just write it like this, minus m, even though it's not dimensionally correct, so stick in some scale here. Okay, thank you. So this is, it's actually better to write it as a map between operators. Then this is a correct map of operators. So a mass term for the fermions maps to a mass term for the bosons. So let's analyze what happens when the mass squared of the bosons is positive. So when the mass squared of the bosons is positive, we can just integrate them out, and we remain with a pure Chern-Simons theory again. And now this Redlich phenomenon does not take place. The Chern-Simons level is not shifted when we integrate out non-relativistic bosons, and therefore we just get u and f over 2 plus k level minus n. This is a Chern-Simons TQFT, and there is something that's called level rank duality that shows that this is in fact exactly the same as SUN level nf over 2 plus k. So this shows that indeed this bosonic theory has this phase when the bosons are heavy with a positive mass squared. When the mass squared of the bosons is negative, we have a Higgs mechanism, so the bosons condense. And the bosons condense, they break some of the gauge group, like in the Higgs mechanism. So here one has to do a little bit counting, a little bit of a counting exercise, which is very illuminating. This counting exercise is going to be very, very important. So,
question, is there a quartic term or something like that?
Yes, very good. So I didn't write the Lagrangian, this is just a mnemonic. But yeah, the Lagrangian would include like the gauge part with some Chern-Simons level, Chern-Simons term, some kinetic terms, a mass term, which is what I'm discussing now, and a quartic term to stabilize the theory. So this is the interesting part. It's easy to see in the bosonic theory that this phase exists. It's less obvious that this phase exists. And this is one where one has to do a little bit of work. So one has to try to understand when these bosons condense, what does the gauge symmetry break to? So there are NF bosons in the fundamental representation. So the idea is that there is a Higgs mechanism which breaks the gauge group to something smaller, namely minus an F over 2 plus K. Because there are NF bosons that have condensed, and therefore the gauge symmetry has been reduced to that. Okay, and now we see that using level rank duality again, we see this phase, this anionic phase of the theory. So we see that this phase in the bosonic description is like a Higgs phase, so to speak. So this is a Higgs phase, and this phase is where the Higgs, where the bosons are just massive and decoupled, massive and uncondensed. So this is a massive phase. So this little computation that you can just check carefully that it's correct, that's the key to answering the question, how large does K have to be for this phase diagram to be true? Because this gauge group may not make sense if K is very low, is very small, because minus nf over 2 is a negative number. So here we have the answer to this question. So that's where my interest in this problem has started, from this observation that K cannot be small And so for sufficiently small k, this picture doesn't make any sense. That was the point. And therefore, something new had to come. So we see from this little computation here that this picture makes sense only for k, which is bigger or equal to nf over 2. Below that, this picture doesn't make sense. So this picture with a single transition, with a bosonic dual, with gauge group U and nf bosons doesn't make sense for k smaller than nf over 2. Why? Because in this phase, instead of doing a standard, this Higgs mechanism just doesn't work. The gauge group would be broken completely, and no level rank duality would exist, and you would never get this theory of anions. That's the point. Now, notice the following. This is an important observation for what comes now. Notice that k, if you look at the Chern-Simons term, k is morally speaking like 1 over coupling. Why? If you canonically normalize the fields, ignoring the kinetic term, then you would see that k appears in the denominator as a coupling constant. So therefore, large k, this large k is like weak coupling. Okay, and therefore, in some sense, this picture that we have been led to, that this is the phase diagram of QCD in 2 plus 1 dimensions for k bigger than f over 2. So this is, in some sense, the weakly coupled phase of the theory. So this could be, you could think about it as weakly coupled QCD in 2 plus 1 dimensions. In fact, one can make this very precise. And also addressing again Matthijs's question. So how do we know that this is a second order transition? For large enough k, I mean, k which is of order nf over 2 is not very large parametrically. But for large enough k, we can actually compute the anomalous dimensions of the gauge invariant operators, and they're very close to those of a free fermion theory. So one can even look for these theories in the bootstrap. So these CFTs are really continuously connected to weakly coupled CFTs. And so this phase of the theory where there is a boson fermion duality can be roughly viewed as a weakly coupled phase of the theory. And it clearly breaks down for sufficiently small k. So the question is, what happens for sufficiently small k? K is smaller than nf over 2. This is like the strong coupling phase. This is where we have strong coupling in some sense. And we need to come up with a new idea. So I'm just going to try to offer some corrected phase diagram for this regime. And you'll see that, so we'll find two things, a corrected phase diagram. There will be a corrected phase diagram and new dualities. So by trying to patch up the strongly coupled phase of the theory, we'll also run into some new dualities, new boson fermion dualities. Are there any questions about the large k story? That's the standard boson fermion duality story on which many people have written papers. I think Georgia was one of the first to point out to the connection between SU and U. There were many others, perhaps also in the audience, who wrote about it. In particular, Aharoni and Minwala and Seiberg and content spender people such as Max and Ashwin and others and Sentil. So this is something that drew a lot of attention. And here I want to point out that in fact it only addresses the weakly coupled phase of the theory. And we still have a challenge to understand this phase of the theory. Is this agree? Do you agree with this presentation? Good. Okay. So now let me, I'll try to erase that. This one is not movable, right? Okay, I'll erase that. In fact, our proposal for the small the strongly coupled phase of QCD in 2 plus 1 dimensions is not going to be completely disconnected from this fermion boson dualities, as you'll see in a second. So here we have SUN level k plus an f over 2. And here we would have SUN level k minus an f over 2. And we still have to come up with something here for small k. This is going to be k smaller than an f over 2. So let's make, let's try to get something and see if we land on our feet. That's going to be the strategy. In fact, this is by and large the strategy in this business. So this theory was not adequate for small k for the reason that in the massive phase, we landed on our feet. So this came out right in the bosonic theory. But this just came out wrong. I mean, when we condense it, when we condense the scalars, then instead of getting this Chern-Simons TQFT, what we got was some garbage. But let's try to understand this garbage a little bit better. Let's try to understand the failure of this theory to match the phases of this theory a little bit in more detail. So we have we start from a gauge theory, which is U and F over 2 plus K at level N or minus N. It's not going to be important for what I'm going to say. And we have an F bosons. And now we add in the Lagrangian a mass term, a negative mass, phi dagger phi. And so these scalars condense. And the gauge symmetry is broken. Now the point is that when k is smaller than an f over 2, the gauge symmetry is completely broken, right? So there is no remaining gauge dynamics. In fact, if an f is very large, you can understand intuitively that there will be many, many left Goldstone bosons, which are uneaten, right? Because the U and F symmetry, remember that this model has a U and F symmetry. This model has a U and F symmetry. In fact, SU and F would be sufficient for our discussion. So this model has a global SU and F symmetry, which acts on the bosons by rotations. The U1 is less obvious because the U1 is actually gauged, but then there is another U1 symmetry in the, which is called the magnetic symmetry. That's not going to be important. All that you have to see is that if we write such a potential with a quartic interaction, so if we have such a potential with a quartic interaction, this preserves SU and F symmetry. And now the bosons condense, and the symmetry is broken. But and some of these Goldstone bosons are eaten by the gauge fields, while others are not eaten by the gauge fields. So if this is the global symmetry G, you can do a small computation at home. And you can show that once the boson condenses, once the bosons condense, the symmetry is broken to the following thing. It's broken to SU NF over 2 plus K times SU NF over 2 minus K. So this is a more precise characterization of what happens when k is smaller than an f over 2. Instead of the gauge symmetry being partially Higgs and you get non-abelian and you would get non-abelian anions, the gauge symmetry is completely Higgs and you get a sigma model on some coset, which is SUNF divided by SUNF plus 2, SUNF over 2 minus k. SUNF over 2 plus k, SUNF over 2 minus k. And you can see that this coset makes no sense for large k, which was the previous story, because that factor makes no sense. And indeed, previously, there was no coset. There was a non-abelian theory of anions. So the bosonic theory suggests that maybe there is some role to be played to the following coset, SUNF divided by SUNF over 2 plus k times SUNF over 2 minus k. And this coset also has a name. Does anybody recognize the coset? Have you ever seen some something like that before? This is the Grossmannian of an f over 2 plus k planes in the nf plane in an f. So this is the Grossmannian of an f over 2 plus k and comma nf. The complex Grossmannian, not the real Grossmannian. This is the complex Grossmannian manifold with these indices. Okay. So the bosonic theory suggests that there is some role to be played by this coset. But in the fermionic theory, we don't see such a coset. All we can see is are these two anionic TQFTs, Tren-Simons TQFTs. So the idea is that perhaps the fermionic theory is so strongly coupled at small k, indeed, when k is very small, the theory is strongly coupled, that it spontaneously breaks the symmetry. And it's a new quantum phase. We just don't see it semi-classically. This would be analogous to the chiral symmetry breaking in QCD, which we do not see semi-classically. It happens when the masses are small and the theory is strongly coupled. And similarly, QCD in 2 plus 1 dimensions perhaps breaks the symmetry in this way. This is what the bosonic theory suggests. But then we have to reconcile that with the absence of this phase asymptotically at large mass. So what we're going to postulate are two phase transitions. So these two phase transitions are meant to cloak this new phase between them. So we propose two phase transitions for SUN level k plus fermions. Where here we have a sigma model with target space M. This is the proposal. And we'll discuss these phase transitions in a second. There will be some bosonic duals to these two phase, to each of these two phase transitions, one of which is new and one of which is very similar to what we had before, because in fact that's how it was constructed. This phase was constructed in this way. So the idea is that the fermionic theory has in fact two phase transitions when k is smaller than n f over 2. And in between them, there is a new symmetry breaking phase, which is a little bit reminiscent of the symmetry breaking phase in QCD in 4 dimensions, but it's very different in detail. It's this Grossmannian manifold. It's not a group manifold. In 4 dimensions, the symmetry breaking phase led to a sigma model on a group manifold. This is just a coset, a homogeneous space. Okay, so let me try now to draw the phase diagram more completely. How much more time have I got? I just have to watch.
Okay. 12 minutes.
Yeah, great. So let me just summarize. And fortunately, this is. So I'll try to summarize.
What do you think are the most natural of the parameters for that symmetric?
Yeah, I'll discuss that in a second. Great, thanks for the question. I'll tell you exactly what condensates one should be looking at. So I'll just draw the phase diagram, and then we'll do two consistency checks, which are in fact not guaranteed from the construction, but they work out, which gives us more confidence in this picture. And then I'll also mention how to look for it. Let's say if you're a lattice person, which condensates should develop for this picture to be true.
Yep. May I just ask, is the magnetic U1 just coming from the long further right? Like it's
yes.
There,
yes.
There.
So the magnetic U1 is like U1 baryon in 4 dimensions. It doesn't do anything. This is the first approximation answer. The second approximation answer is that sigma models often have Wes-Zumino terms. As you remember, the sigma model in 3 plus 1 dimensions had a Wes-Zumino term which knew about U1 baryon, which seems to not participate at first sight. So similarly here, if you want, I mean, we have a lot of material about that in the paper, but there is in fact a Wes-Zumino term, which knows about the magnetic U1 and reproduces its discrete anomalies. So this business is also supported by a huge amount of discrete anomalies that have to be matched, which I'm not even discussing. But yes, the U1 magnetic basically comes along for the ride, and at second order, if you want to be more precise, there is a Wes-Zumino term that reproduces its discrete anomalies.
So there's no U1 magnetic. It's an SUN theory.
So this theory?
The U1 magnetic is on the bosonic side.
That's right. That's right. Yes. 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 In the U1 magnetic, the existence of the Wes-Zumino term is actually easy to see because it's in the Higgs phase of the model. The Tren-Simons term does not quite disappear. It becomes a certain H3 class of some of M. The Tren-Simons term becomes something that's in the third cohomology of M. So it's very easy to see this Wes-Zumino term in the bosonic description. In the fermionic description, it has to do with the baryon symmetry, very similar to 4 dimensions, in fact. OK, so let me just summarize the phase diagram and then mention many of its predictions, some of its predictions, and some consistency checks. So the idea is that the fermionic theory can have two phase transitions, not one. So this is SUN level K plus NF fermions. And we're now discussing K, which is sufficiently small. Because the large K story was already understood. Now, each of these transitions has a new bosonic dual, well, a certain bosonic dual. So this is the new bosonic dual. It's a minus an F over 2. Sorry, it's an F over 2 minus K. Minus K level N. This is an F over 2 plus K. So notice that this guy is the same as what we had before. And this guy is new. So this bosonic dual did not appear before because we did not need it. And also it did not make sense because the argument would have been negative. Here we have a sigma model. Well, we have a symmetry breaking. The symmetry G equals U and F is broken spontaneously to I was slightly imprecise before. I'll fix it in a second. Yeah. When I wrote the cosod before, I was just slightly imprecise. Let me just fix that for the good order of things. So I divided by a little bit too much. Actually, I should have done that. Okay. That's correct. And that's also correct. So we have so the idea is that there is a symmetry breaking in this strongly coupled quantum phase. We have a sigma model, and there is a Wessel-Minow term, if you want to be precise, that remembers the U1. And here we have these two QFTs that we had before. They're always there. And that's UN. So this is the suggestion. So a new bosonic dual, a new phase. And in fact, you can see that there is some consistency because this guy in the Higgs phase gives this coset. And also this guy in the Higgs phase gives this coset.
Which bosonic theories is only two patches?
Yes. Now the bosonic theories, you see, they have so basically large K is weak coupling. So the bosonic theories are like in the large K phase. So they're weakly coupled. They have two transitions, two phases, and a single transition. So the bosonic theory just probes these phases. This bosonic theory probes these two phases. This bosonic theory probes these two phases. So it's not a triality. It's two dualities. Two dualities, not a triality, because this bosonic theory does not see this phase at all. It's just like in the same universality class as the fermionic theory, with the mass appropriately tuned to be in that transition. And similarly here. So these are two dualities. Both of them, in fact, give rise to the same coset. So that's a small consistency check. They have the same discrete anomalies, the same symmetries. So everything seems to make sense. And now there is a cute consistency check, which is if you plug the most extreme case. K equals 0 is an extreme case. Here, I should have perhaps said it. So K equals 0 is the most strongly coupled phase, because K like just doesn't. 1 over the coupling seems to blow up naively. So in that case, there is a theorem by Vaffa and Witten, Vaffa Witten from the 80s. That's something that existed much, much before this whole thing started. And the theorem of Vaffa and Witten said that if there is symmetry breaking, the theorem said precisely that U and F over 2 times U and F over 2, which is a subgroup of U and F, that subgroup can never be broken. That's the theorem of Vaffa and Witten about the K equals 0 case from many years ago. And somehow this construction, you land on your feet. Because this is precisely the symmetry breaking pattern that people expect for K equals 0. And it has been even seen on the lattice in some cases, inconclusively seen on the lattice in some cases. But this scenario somehow leads to something that's perfectly consistent with Vaffa Witten. And furthermore, there is a time reversal anomaly, which is defined mod 16, which is a little bit more advanced. I cannot explain it now. But that's again something that only exists for k equals 0, and it just works. It seems to be precisely match what this conjecture produces. And another, so all the anomalies work, the new mod 16, all the other anomalies, they all work, and also RG flows. So you can ask yourself whether integrating out quarks, you can decrease the ranks of this Grassmannian in an appropriate fashion, and that works. So all the consistency checks that we could subject this picture to have been respected. And it leads to, well, this would lead to a consistent picture for any k. For large k, we would have that story. For small k, there is this story with two dualities and symmetry breaking, a new symmetry breaking phase. Now to Davide's question of how to see the symmetry breaking phase. So one could study the fermion bilinear, which is a matrix in the adjoint of SUNF. So this scenario implies that as a function of k, it has k once, and let's say nf minus k minus once. Or more precisely, k x's and nf minus k y's. So the condensate can always be diagonalized, and there will be k degenerate eigenvalues of type 1, and f minus k degenerate eigenvalues of type 2. There are no monopole operators in this theory. No, there is no magnetic symmetry. They don't add much. There is no magnetic symmetry in SUN level k plus nf because pi 1 of SUN is vanishing.
You want to ask about the human charge, the baryonic charge.
Ah, but the baryonic charge is unbroken, which is why this is a good order parameter. So the baryon charge vanishes. The baryon order parameter vanishes. And in fact, sometimes the baryon is a fermion, so you have to talk about the baryon squared. But in any case, it vanishes. And this, we claim, splits into two blocks, one of size k and one of size nf minus k. One of size nf over 2 plus k and one of size nf over 2 minus k, so that you would get this. I'm sorry, I wrote something incorrect before. So one block of this size, one block of this size. And when k vanishes, the two blocks are in the same size. And that's what Vaffa and Witten proved, that at most you can have two blocks, and they have to be of the same size, and maybe even x equals to y. But that we don't know. So we actually claim that x is not the same as y. So the symmetry breaking does take place. So what additional support exists for this picture? You can go to large n, try to prove that. So in fact, there is some work that will appear at some point in the future showing that at large n, this is forced on you. You can prove that this is the case at large n. These two blocks exist at large n. You can see it in deep brain constructions. I'm told that if you study the deep brain construction of this theory, you see that you want to split it into two blocks of brains of those sizes. And perhaps it can. There are several special cases where you plug small values of n and k, which are closely related to systems that are of interest in condensed matter physics, and they also arrive at similar conclusions. So in summary, this picture passes many tests. It has some interesting predictions, and it would be interesting to prove it or give more evidence to it. Thanks. Yep.
Yes, I think your last point was a bit fast. So, is there, like, in which sense can you engineer like a short RG flow between any of the theories on the top line to the bottom line?
So suppose you take out of the NF, this is this M axis that I've been studying.
Yes.
Is just a slice in the possible mass deformations that you can do. This is just a mass deformation which is still above there, where all the fermions get the same mass, and this mass term preserves the full UNF symmetry. So that's like a very natural axis to study the dynamics as a function of. But you could also imagine that you take one quark and give it a huge mass. Then obviously this becomes SUN level k plus NF minus 1 quarks. And there would be a different Grassmannian, because you would shift an F to an F minus 1. And you would also shift K, because K needs to be shifted when you integrate out the fermion. So the question is, can you sit at the level of the sigma model? Namely, suppose you start from a sigma model with this target space. Can we deform the sigma model in such a way that it would flow to the Grassmannian manifold with these indices shifted? And yes, there is such a deformation. So it does not prove anything, but it shows that it's not inconsistent with RG flows.
It's negative
yes.
K make any sense in the
original
theory?
What? Negative K. So K can be result loss of generality, restricted to be between 0 and infinity, because K and minus K are related by time overall change of orientation. So it's just like a choice of orientation that you make once and for all. So yeah, I just restricted K to be a non-negative number. And then the dynamic splits into two cases, large K and small K. Large K is where the boson-fermion dualities appear. Small K is where symmetry breaking is suggested to appear. Yeah.
So do you expect that the phase transitions are second order, those two?
One cannot prove that, but those would be natural expectations.
I'm just curious because at large n and k, you know vaguely what that.
That's correct.
Over there is. So I wonder if like the higher spin gravity theory somehow splits into two in some regime. I have no clue if anything like
we,
it, but yeah.
There is no. It would be nice. The point is that here the robust part of this phase diagram is the symmetry breaking part. It's hard to commit that this is second order or first order. It would be up for grabs. I don't know. But this is the robust. There is something here that is worth emphasizing, that in four dimensions, that you get the sigma model only at one point in parameter space, namely when all the quarks are exactly massless, and you have SU and F times SU and F symmetry. Here, symmetry breaking is suggested to take place not at one point. It's actually suggested to take place in the whole region of the phase diagram. That's a novelty compared to 3 plus 1 dimensions. And it's closely related to the fact that in 2 plus 1 dimensions, there is a mass term that preserves all the symmetries. So this is not quite the same as the symmetry breaking in 4 dimensions, because it takes place in the whole range of the mass parameters.
Zero mass is inside, right?
Zero mass is only well defined when k equals to 0, because then it's at the time reversal invariant point. And yes, in that case, zero mass is right here, smack in between. Because the phase diagram has to be symmetric. Yes, so zero mass is right in between.
Can the full QCD3, I mean this entire theory, this entire line, can it be realized as some domain wall effect in QCD4?
Yes. Yeah, we wrote a whole paper with David just a few weeks ago, maybe.
Oh, okay, that's
where we essentially that's another piece of evidence for this picture. Or that at least shows that this phase is consistent with everything. We actually show that this transition takes place on a domain wall. On one side of the transition, there is this phase. And on the other side of the transition, there is this phase. So this transition can actually be seen in a domain wall theory at theta equals pi in 4 dimensions. So at least it shows that such transitions are possible, if not more. That's the minimal thing you can say, that these transitions are not impossible.
There are no more questions. Let's thank our speaker then.